If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, I'm depressed alcoholic comedian James Nokise. A couple of years ago, I had a mental health breakdown which resulted in panic attacks on international flights, stepping in front of an oncoming bus, and eventually showering so long that I began to get a little bit hungry. And that's when I discovered something magnificent. Through the magic of takeaways and running water, it turns out my mental health safe space is eating fried chicken in the shower. And that's how we've ended up here, a mental health podcast on headspace and happiness. This episode, I'm talking to MyFM breakfast host, Tegan Yodith. We'll be talking about keeping strange hours.
I think my first alarm went off at like 4 or 5 this morning.
Getting strange messages.
You can have 100 nice comments, but you get one bad one and that'll ruin your whole day.
And dealing with strange expectations.
Just because I'm a public person that has spoken about mental health, it doesn't mean I should hold the weight or the pressure to be the voice for mental health for fucking everybody.
Some of this will get a bit real, the language, the subjects, so make sure that you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us, eating fried chicken in the shower. Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a mental health podcast with me, James Nokise. And today, I'm joined by Tegan Yodith.
Yodith. It's spelt with a W and a whole bunch of other letters, but it's actually pronounced Yodith.
Yeah, see, it's Welsh, and I should be able to pronounce that.
Mm-hmm.
But Welsh is hard.
Yeah.
If you've grown up with, like, the vowel languages, like Samoan or Tadeo, because you go from a, e, I, or u to cluck, 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 cluck.
Yeah, I've never even tried to speak Welsh, and I haven't been to Wales. I just have I'm not in touch with it at all.
Thank you for coming into the shower, partly because you do breakfast radio. Mm-hmm. You're part of MyFM's morning crew. Is it morning crew?
My morning crew.
The My Morning Crew. My Morning Crew. The MMC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that means that no matter what time we record this, you have gotten up way earlier than me.
Oh, yeah. I think my first alarm went off at like 4 or 5 this morning. Ooh. But that's every morning, so it's okay. And I'm a little bit on the like low-key sick side as well. So that makes the early mornings like super tough. But I'm just like, oh, whatever. I recorded my weather this morning, which is the first thing I do when I get in.
Yeah.
And it's like, Morena, Tamaki Makoto, you must play hoodie there for today. Like, it's terrible.
Is it like a little bit of pressure living in a pandemic COVID time to have anything that affects your throat?
Oh, yeah, but then it's like, otherwise I've got to do a freaking, like, a show from home, and that's admin, and so I'm like, okay, if I'm only a touch under the weather, I'm sure I'm okay. I'm just going to do my due diligence and hand sanitize and cover my mouth or whatever,
Then come into a shower with a guy and just eat greasy
and it's just
chicken.
A nice little cesspit of germs right here.
Hi, and welcome to the last episode of Eating Fried Chicken Shower. Because how long have you been doing mornings?
2.5 years.
Right.
Yeah. So 2 years officially on the My Morning Crew, but I did 6 months before that, just doing the news reading and stuff and with the show. Yeah, the first week I was on, my mic didn't turn on and it literally went, my news, and I went, fuck. And I was like, oh, great, first week. Swore, said the F word in the middle of the news, but, you know, it is what it is.
That's all right.
Like, yeah. I still do the sport. I still read all the sport.
Is that based off swearing? Here's the news,
well,
fuck, she should be a sports reporter.
The thing was, I'm pretty sure my boss, he didn't want me to do news or sport because he was like, you've got a full-time job doing the show, essentially. Mm. But I wouldn't let the sport go because there's so many Māori and Pacifica names in sport that don't really get the justice or even the time to be pronounced correctly. So I was like, can I just have that?
Yeah.
And then I'll know that I'm either pronouncing it correctly or doing my frickin' best to do so.
And just for our listeners who may have picked up on the two different ways in which we pronounce the Pacifica and Pacifica, Tegan is using the Auckland pronunciation. And I'm using the Wellington pronunciation.
What does that mean? Does that mean?
It means mine's more pretentious than yours.
Okay. Yeah. I actually had to do an announcer read today and we were saying, Is it Pacifica? Enunciate the F, right?
Do you know the problem is?
What?
So we're like, Pacific Ocean is so many nations.
Yeah.
And all of the accents hit vowels just a little different.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing with, like, whenever I speak to them, like, at formal functions, I always have to, like, apologize to the elders afterwards and just let them know, hey, I'm Samoan. My vowels are Samoan.
Yeah.
I know to some of you. I just sounded like this when I spoke it.
Yeah.
Like, I know.
It was Samoan Language Week not that long ago.
Mm.
And what I find so interesting about Samoan language is, like, I feel with Māori and even with Tongan as well, it's like, dot 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 dot, whereas in Samoan it just seems to roll, like the words roll, and like even manuia, whereas I was seeing it as manuia, that's how I was seeing it in my head, because that was the sort of the letters I was putting together. Interesting language.
Because you're Māori ancestry, right?
Like, yes, Māori. I am part Māori, Ngāti Kuri and Te Apuri, and I would say my main ancestry would be Welsh, and sort of my more NZ European side, I think I've got some French, Italian, English, whatever else in there, but I am on that sort of whakapapa journey and learning about my heritage. I've been to my whenua once now, which is really, it's a really empowering experience. And also I got my first tamoko as well, which as a part of my, I think was really important in my mental health journey as well.
Mm.
I sort of did a lot of like research in the sense of being a bit more holistic about it.
Mm.
And a lot of people actually reached out to me and said that learning where you came from is a really beautiful way to feel like you know who you are and be a lot more comfortable with yourself. And it was actually did help with my mental health as well.
You know what we say in the Samoan culture is what? The tattoo is under the skin and the tattooist just reveals it.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Ooh. I do have the Bacardi bat on my shoulder, so but I'm also an alcoholic, so maybe that does...
So maybe it's all just... Yeah. It still makes sense.
And are you close with your parents?
Yeah, really close. Yeah. My parents are still together, fortunately. I know that's a bit of a kind of minority thing these days. But
so, preach to the choir.
Mum and Dad celebrated their... they celebrate their 31st wedding anniversary this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Super close with them though. Yeah.
And like, where are you from, like, originally? Where'd you grow up?
I'm an army brat, so kind of grew up all over the place.
Yeah.
Born in Wellington.
The best city.
Lived in Papakura, South Auckland for like 5 years, moved to Palmy for a couple of years, moved to Tonga for a couple of years, moved back to Palmy for a couple of years, lived in the United States for a year, and then finished my schooling in Palmy. And then now I've lived in Auckland for the last like 7 years, since uni. Cool. Yeah, so I've kind of been everywhere. I've been in Auckland for a long time. I would usually say I'm from Palmy. That's where I say.
Yeah, right.
Because I did a lot of my growing up.
And you would voluntarily say you're from Palmy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. P naughty. I'm the P naughty shorty.
P naughty shorty.
That's what I like to say. Yeah.
So you would have like grown up when they like didn't even have anything in Palmy as well.
I mean, we had the plaza.
Yeah.
The Esplanade.
like the square.
Train there. The square.
Hadn't even been done up then, had it? It's just like a field in the middle of the city.
You know what? Palmy gets a lot of heat, but I think it's the perfect place to raise a family.
Yeah.
Because it's not too, I don't know, I feel like Auckland would be really interesting to grow up. And I feel like Wellington's really similar as well. It's like everyone rips their area code really hard.
Yeah.
And Palmy's like, no one really cares about what school you're from, and like it's just like whatever. Whereas here it's like, yeah, I'm from, and my sister went to Ags. She went to school in Auckland.
Yeah.
And it's, she would rep that she went to Ags quite heavily. Whereas me, I'm just like, oh, I went to Freiburg High.
I still get guys back in Wellington. They're like, yeah man, Burnett's boys. And I'm like, we are in our late 30s. It has been 20 years, man.
Yeah, see, I don't get that. I don't get it. Yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Perfect for when you're popping home, even to Palmerston North.
But how, and did you go straight into radio?
No, I went to uni. I studied at AUT, Auckland University of Technology. I did a Bachelor of Comms. I majored in TV and screen. So actually, although I fucking loved radio, loved radio, and that was my goal going in. But at AUT, you learn so much and kind of touches of different parts of the industry. Mm. Actually failed radio, funnily enough, in uni. So I did TV, not as a second option, but I just thought, I seem to understand TV a lot better.
Right.
And then out of uni, just applied for a job at George FM, editing videos and doing their social content and stuff like that. So it was the TV part of my degree that got me into radio, ironically. But and then I've just been there ever since. So I've been there for the last 4 years.
Is it weird to be like stable after a childhood kind of going everywhere?
Yeah, and I'm very aware that because of the job I'm in now, like being a broadcaster. A broadcaster is a very fancy name for what I do. I feel like I just turn up and talk shit like for 4 hours a day. But
I eat chicken in a shower.
Yeah, I mean. But so, like, I feel like being a broadcaster, Auckland is kind of the only place. Well, no, but you could go to Wellington, could go to Christchurch, but I feel like for what I'm trying to achieve and what I want to do, like, Auckland is just where I'll be based indefinitely for now.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of just like, well, it is kind of weird being really stable, yeah. And knowing that I've been here for 7 years, I'm like, shit. I haven't stayed in one place for that long my whole life. Yeah. Yeah. It's fuzzy.
What chicken have you bought for us?
I went with the buttermilk fried chicken from Bird on a Wire, because every time I go past Bird on a Wire, I have to do the little reverse backtrack and go buy some, because it's my favorite. Yeah. Are we digging in?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
I was going to keep talking to you about
Auckland.
Like,
I was being shy.
Don't be shy. Oh, my gosh.
I would have got it straight away.
Oh, you should have dug in. I feel bad now. I'm sorry I detained you.
Ooh, it's looking a bit fancy with the old... some greenery on there. I don't know if it's just a...
Do you know what these sauces are? Are you a connoisseur?
I think this is like an aioli or something.
Okay.
And then this one's the same, but with a bit of spice.
All right. I'm going to go spice.
I do a bit of a mix.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I always lick the lid. Oh, I just got like the biggest whiff of garlic in my life.
All right. That's good.
It's on. I feel like their fried chicken feels really light as well. And that's why I don't feel as guilty when I go get it. Well, just know I'll never have a six pack.
All that abs?
Yeah, in my life.
Is it as important though?
I tell you what, growing up, I feel like maybe, and definitely through my teenage years, the epitome of like the perfect bod for like a female, I was thinking was like, I would see like runway models. And I thought you had to be so skinny. And genetically, naturally, that was not me. I was tall,
yeah,
but I was definitely a little bit wider set. Not big, like slim, but just not, you know, I had boobs and I had a little bit of a bum and I had big thighs and all my friends were were tiny and I thought, oh my God, I'm so big compared to them. So there's a lot of body issues then. But now I'm like, oh God, no, I'd much rather have a bit of junk in the trunk, so to speak.
Or curves.
Yeah, curves. Because now that's the more desirable body. And I hate to say it, but you know, thanks to the Kardashians and like those kind of women.
Yeah.
Although their bodies are, I was going to say a touch manufactured. They're pretty manufactured, but they did give a, all of a sudden that kind of body was desirable because, and girls gassed up other girls' bodies like that. But fuck, like your body is your body. Like I'll gas up anyone for whatever their body looks like.
But that's the thing is that I get what you're saying is that when everyone is one build and just through genetics, you're the other build.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of like, there must be something wrong with me because I'm the odd one out.
Yeah. It takes a while to find learn that acceptance, but that's the beauty of growing up. You kind of just find yourself and you just like stop giving a shit about, I don't know, that kind of little stuff. But every now and then you feel waves of it. Like recently I've been going through this whole thing that last year, right before lockdown or during lockdown, I got quite thin and, you know, I was working out a lot. Probably not eating as much as I should, but when I was eating, it was well. And I just dropped all this weight. Got really toned, but I wasn't that happy, to be fair. But now I'm like, you know, I'm actually like 10 kgs heavier. I don't feel heavy. I still work out heaps, but I just eat whatever I want. But now I'm going like, was that the better body type? Is this the body type I like? I still feel comfortable because I work out heaps, but I kind of sometimes just compare myself to other people going like, oh, but I wish I was just like a touch thinner. But I just need to be like, oh, but it's not sustainable. And I'm just trying to get my like head out of that space. It can be really tough.
Have you had a hard breakup in your life? Can I just ask, only because it's a very familiar, were you doing the depression workout? Like after a breakup, post-breakup? Yeah.
I think
I've never been as ripped as when I came out of a long-term relationship.
The thinnest and most ripped I was was like not quite at the breakup stage, but it was in the lead up.
Yeah.
So it was like, and then he left me, and I just, that's what I had to do. I just had to keep like working out. And then even in lockdown, because it was through lockdown, and I was like, all good. Like, I was like, I'll go work out in my room. I'll be fine. Like,
There was a stage I was doing comedy gigs and then going to the gym.
What?
And like, it was me and like the people who clean Wellington's buildings, because some of those guys would clean the buildings and then come to the gym. And so 1 o'clock in the morning, there's like seven of us.
Oh my God.
And it's one of those things where you go, no, this is normal.
Yeah.
Because I need to be healthy. I need to be in shape. I need to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell your mates, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing at the gym at 1 o'clock in the morning? And you're right. And then, like, if a couple of years later, you're a little bit heavier. Mm. You're not as hardcore, but man, you're happier, right?
Hard. And I think back then, when I was looking at myself in the mirror, although I could see I was toned and a bit thinner, it was never enough in my head. It wasn't enough. And then I think now when I look, I'm like, I'm just like, oh, okay, that's what my body looks like today, sweet ass. Like, oh, I'm a bit bloated today, whatever.
That's why you need to get some Samoan aunties in your life.
Well, yeah.
Because then no matter how curvy you are, that you look good, you look healthy.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Eat more, eat more. No, it's gout. Not gout, enough. Gout. Diabetes gout. We have. How are you with guilt?
Better. Yeah. When there was definitely a time where it was almost like I would really feel guilty, like especially when I was working out a lot. If I didn't work out, I would feel terrible, and I'd make myself feel terrible about it. But I definitely don't do that now. I'm kind of like, if I don't feel like working out one day, I'm just going to be like, no, I don't feel like it today. And it's like, okay to feel like that.
Yeah.
But it took me like maybe a year after being in a really low spot to really build myself up to not make myself feel guilty all the time. Because I feel guilty, like, I love burger fuel, but I know it is not good for the belly. Like, you know, I'm going to get some love handles if I keep eating it in the consistency that I do. But I love burger fuel. So sometimes it's just like, oh, just fucking eat it. Like, who cares? Like, just have it. Like, life is short. What if I die tomorrow and I didn't have burger fuel when I wanted to?
I feel like burger fuel needs to get you to do an ad campaign.
I have been trying. I am always, like, plugging them constantly on air. I'm like, I love burger fuel. I come at least twice a week. Look, like, surely.
So what did you do for yourself? Because I respect a long journey. One of the things that annoys me sometimes, talking mental health with people, is when they go, yeah, man, and then I just came out of it like that. And I'm like, no,
you didn't. That's not how it works, right?
Yeah, I respect the slow journey.
Yeah.
Like, what did you do to help yourself feel less guilty?
I don't know. It just... I feel like because it wasn't an instantaneous thing for me, so I think it was harder for me to notice what I did different. But I think a big thing was I think you kind of... I'm definitely... Because I'm such an extrovert, and I think the way that I recharge my batteries is through, like, a lot of social interaction, a lot of being around people. So it was almost being around the right people.
Yeah.
People that didn't, you know... I'm not saying there was a lot of toxic people in my life, but there was definitely a couple that I had to just either limit my interactions with or cut the interactions completely. Mm. But I definitely think hanging around people that don't gas you up, that can cause me to kind of like get in that like real, the, you know, my inner monologue to really get in that negative self-talk and stuff like that. So, and like not just related to the guilt, just related to feeling shit. I think it was just slowly, one by one, culling different toxic habits that I had, toxic people that surrounded me. And then it slowly, I saw the shift starting to change. It took, like, I think I was at my lowest point at some point last year. And it's taken now, which I'd say is at least a year, for me to... And I've definitely had highs and lows, because I think people think, like, you have depression once and then it goes away.
Yeah, and then you ascend.
It's just, like, constantly going up. Nah. It's, like, it's something that you have, and you have a low point, and then it's just a constant battle for the rest of your life trying to manage how to not get back there.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of times I've sort of slipped in that year, but I've never... It's never been as consistent as it was. And I think it's just... And now I'm at a really nice place that I still have those lows and I still have the same thoughts, but I am so much more self-aware and have a better understanding of why my brain works that way and all that kind of stuff, that I think that's why I'm just in a better spot. But it was a long time. And I know it's going to be like this for the rest of my life.
Mm.
It's, and because there'll be new challenges where... Like right now I'm a single... 24, nearly 25-year-old female, you know, when I'm in a relationship, when I eventually get into a relationship, there's going to be new things that are going to be challenging. When I have kids one day, that's going to be a new thing that, you know, new things that will challenge me. maybe a new job. I'm going to keep this job for a little while, but, you know, maybe I have a new one. And there's
like a Burger Fuel ad campaign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's other things that might trigger certain emotions that I didn't, because I haven't been in that situation before, wasn't aware of that that could actually happen. I think it's just going to be constant. But I think it's just like always giving yourself props for how far you've come and what you are able to deal with on a daily basis, and not getting too caught up in the future, not getting too caught up in what's happened in the past, just being present. Like day-to-day shit.
Yeah.
It's been real helpful for me.
And I think, like, because I've got depression with a bit of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Same. High-functioning as well.
Oh, high-functioning.
So everyone, thinks I'm thriving, but I'm actually just so conscious of not thriving that I do more than I need to. If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Mine manifests in crowds.
Oh, wow.
How ironic, hey?
Yeah.
Put me in front of one. Put me in front of one. Awesome. Like, go to a festival, like, big stage. Mm-hmm. Yep, awesome. Mingle in the crowd. Panic attack.
Wow.
Like, just like, whoo, I can duck out and duck in, but I can't be in it. I've got to be on the edge of it.
Mm-hmm. I actually have, currently, I've got a couple of flatmates, and two of them battle with anxiety, depression, PTSD as well.
Right.
So it's really interesting, our real open conversations where I'll have my door closed and I'll just be like, just having a like low day. And it's like, cool, let me know if you need anything.
Yeah.
Like, because sometimes you just need to sit in your bed and just do nothing and feel sorry for yourself. Like,
yeah.
But as long as you get up the next day and, you know.
Yeah.
But we're all very aware of each other and go, make sure you've had a shower. Make sure you go get your 20 minutes in the sun, you know, outside, mood stabilization, like all sorts of stuff like that. But yeah, I do find it kind of jarring. Like, I try to normalize me saying, yeah, I've got depression and anxiety, because I feel like the more I say it, the less ma I'll ever feel about it. Like, fuck am I, like, embarrassed. But I still, even if I meet a new person, like, say it's a guy, like, oh, I'm going on a date. You don't, like, how many dates in do you say, oh, by the way, I've got mental health issues?
Yeah.
I'm, like, pretty stable right now, but, you know, can be a bit touch and go sometimes. Like, you know, buckle up.
Oh, totally. It's, yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Don't overthink it.
What do you do to get to sleep?
I just, honestly, this is not conventional. I'm not recommending this to anybody, but I love TikTok. I love sitting having a wee scroll. I know you shouldn't have like a bit of like phone time before bed. I know that's not good and not recommended for anybody, but I absolutely love TikTok. It's my favorite app because I just, the shit I find on there, I find content for the next day for work, but I also just find funny stuff that I wouldn't normally see, and I find it a really, I don't know, it's just a nice little safe space where I don't feel like, because I don't really post on TikTok. I've got an account for work. I post some work stuff. That's about it.
Yeah.
But it's, I think because I'm using TikTok as such a bystander as opposed to like, you know, really using it, consuming it so much, I kind of just use it really passively. It's my favorite app. That's literally what I do before bed. Yeah.
You TikTok.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard anyone like give that as a response.
Is that because of, is it the generation thing?
I don't know. Because I generally asked it from a place of like, because of your life and because of the energy that you know someone in their 20s would have at what, 7, 9 8, 9 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah,
I was wondering how you like calm your head to get enough rest to go.
To be fair, like, I feel because I finish work so early in the day, I try to get, you know, go to the gym, whatever, I'm home by like 1-2 p.m. usually on a good day.
Yeah,
and I have so much time on my own. I think I wind down on my own. My flatmates will come home 5-6 o'clock. I'll have a quick catch up with them. But I'm already like settled. I think I just naturally have to settle myself down because I'm not doing anything, you know. But I used to do the old, if I want to be like a bit like, I used to have a resilience journal. And so every day I used to write. When I'm feeling my most low is when I'll use it the most. And I just write what I'm grateful for. So it's like, today I'm grateful for blah, blah, blah. I've got like a little grid and I colour in how happy I'm feeling on a scale. I say if I've had good sleep, if I've moved today, I tick a whole bunch of boxes, some smiley faces. Might as well put a little freaking sticker on there. And then it just has a positive affirmation at the end where I go, I am feeling good about tomorrow, or I am confident in this, or whatever it may be. And doing that every night was a really nice way to just switch off and leave whatever happened that day behind and get ready for the next day. But when I'm in a good spot, which I'd say I'm in a pretty good spot at the moment, I don't really rely on my journal so much, but I do have it there if I need to. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I find when I get into it, you know, my most anxious, I'm really fortunate that one of the people I have in my life is my dad. My dad is he's ex-army now, but army man, logical. So if I ring him crying, saying, "Dad, I don't know what to do, I can't," because sometimes I get in a spot where I'll be at a crossroads where I have to make a decision and I physically cannot make the decision. Because one, if I make one, it might be easier for me, but it's disappointing someone, or it's probably not disappointing someone, but it feels like it is. Go the other way, it's not something I want to do, but it makes everyone else happy. And I quite often get stuck in these crossroads and I physically cannot see a way forward. So I'll ring my dad and I'll go, "Oh, I can't do this." And he will just explain it in the most logical, he just takes all the emotion out of it, says it in the most logical sense. And then I go, "Ah, okay, I'll just do that. It doesn't matter if this person feels this way, or it doesn't matter if I feel this way. Like, I've just got to do what makes sense to happen." So I feel like, yeah, like writing that kind of stuff down and actually just writing out, okay, here's the pros and cons of a situation, and here's an actual solution, rather than just creating problems in your head. I think it's really important to create solutions. Otherwise, you're just going to be stuck. And that's what our anxiety does to us. It just cripples us and just keeps us in one spot.
But sometimes when you're in your own head, you're also creating the reality of your thinking as well. So when you write it out, it kind of forces you. It's like when you look in the mirror and then when you see a picture of yourself,
you're like, "Hold on, I thought I look hot today." And you're like, "That photo doesn't say that. That's literally me." But you know.
But I find out, like, when I'm like in my head and I'm like, "Oh, because of this and this," and then, like, you know, someone close to me will go like, "Well, just write it down." And as soon as I write it down, it's the same way actually I create when I, when I make shows and that.
Yeah.
So I'll think of it, but then when I write it down, I'll like do the problem solving and go, "Oh yeah, no, I can move that to that and that."
Wait, that's cool. Oi, we on. So it's anxiety thinkers.
Yeah, man. Anxiety thinkers. I like it. But you see, we had another guest on here who said you make it seem like a superpower and it becomes a lot easier. And I like that. We anxiety thinkers, man.
Yeah. We think of all the problems that could happen. So we're prepared for all of them. But like, I just don't know what you mean. Like, I always was quite an anxious person, but never, even when I was a teenager, it wasn't normal to have anxiety or depression, or, you know, or we weren't having those conversations yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had my first panic attack when I was 14, and not realizing what I was having was a panic attack. Just being, I remember explaining it to my dad, and he said, "Oh, you probably had a panic attack." And I was like, "Oh, what, that's what that was. I just knew I couldn't breathe, and I knew I physically couldn't feel like I could move, and all that kind of stuff." And there's so many situations I now think back in high school, I'm like, I fully was having a panic attack, but I had no idea what that was. And I think I grew up in a household where, you know, and bless my mum, she was very like, "Oh, you know, but, you know, look at what you do have, you know, be grateful for what you do have." But I think now, in hindsight, I kind of think, wow, but, you know, your issues are only what you know. And yes, someone could have it worse. But I think if you're struggling in your own life, in your own sort of timeline, you have to acknowledge that whatever you're feeling is very valid, because that's what you know. Like, okay, yeah, I'm crying over having a breakup, but I've still got a roof over my head, still got food in my belly, that kind of stuff. And, you know, someone could go, "Well, oh, there's people that are living in poverty, and, you know, you actually have it really good compared to them." It's like all in you've got to keep things in perspective to what you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that was one of the most useful things I learned in my 20s, is that it's not the pain Olympics. You don't have to compare to your other friends either, because I do think I did have friends as well. You could vent to them about what you're struggling through, and it's like, "Oh yeah, well, I'm going through this," and you're like, "Well, okay, when did I ask?" But no, I'm just kidding. But I think there's a way you can vent to your friends, and even if your friend is going through something worse or vice versa, there's a way you can both still support each other through that and acknowledge that each other's feelings are valid, and then it makes you feel heard.
Yeah. Are you the person in your friends group who talks the most about mental health? Or is it more you're in it?
Because you said Definitely one-off. I think it's a lot more of an open conversation with a lot of my friends now, because a lot of us started going through something, especially through that COVID year last year. I think a lot of us struggled with different things. And it's a very open conversation, like, "Oh yeah, when I was at therapy, Yeah, this is what I learned. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, more my therapist was saying this. And I love that we talk about having therapists, whereas before that, I wouldn't be caught dead talking about going to therapy. I'd be too mad to even go to therapy.
Yeah.
And now, like, yeah, it's so I don't know if I would be the most open, but there's I'm definitely one off, yeah, for sure.
Do you get called brave a lot?
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, fucking hell. Nah, you know what?
You know, it's kind of.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
It's, but
I mean, the thing is, so last year I decided to open up about my mental health on air, and which was a big deal. It was Mental Health Week, and it felt appropriate. And I told the boys I'm going to talk about my journey, whatever, because I was sort of at a good point where I think I could talk about it, and I thought, you know, I think it would be good for me to get it off my chest, because I was having this real complex over. Oh, I want it, you know, everyone loved this version of me, but, you know, I was having a hard time turning that on.
Yeah,
so
right.
Wouldn't it be, if people love me, wouldn't it be better if they just knew all of me rather than just the version of me that they've been fed? So I thought maybe if I'm open with it, then I'll find it easier to come to work some days when I'm having a rough time, because people will know that I'm struggling with that. So I did do that, and it was the best thing I could have done, and it was a really great moment for me. But all of a sudden afterward, everyone's like, oh, are you like, they think you're the voice.
Yeah.
You're the voice of mental health now. And I'm like, well, no. I just want to, like, and I'm not, I don't want this to sound like self-absorbed in any way or selfish in any way. But yes, I'm quite happy to have the conversation about mental health. I'm quite happy to facilitate a conversation on air and even at home with my friends, flatmates, whoever. But just because I'm a public person that has spoken about mental health, it doesn't mean I should hold the weight or the pressure to be the voice for mental health for fucking everybody.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I'm the host of a mental health show.
Right. And everyone's like, well, you haven't spoken about this part, or you haven't spoken about this bill. And I'm like, oh, because I don't fucking know about it. I'm sorry. But and I think there was like, saying like that I had mental health issues was one thing, but then having to realize or navigate afterward that I didn't have to confine to those pressures was a whole another thing that I had to get over. But you know, I think now I'm just like, I think if you give in to those pressures too, and I feel the same way with people who post people who post expect you to post every single social issue that's going on. I think if you give in to that pressure, what that creates is kind of this like performative activist, and I don't want that to be me. I always post about things I care about, but I think if you're relying on a public figure or you're relying on an influencer to be giving you every bit of information about something, I think you're in the wrong place. I think if you need information about social issues or news or anything like that, there's plenty of other outlets where you can get that, like the news or like I don't know Google or I don't know, there's so many places that that hold that space, and an influencer or a public figure, they don't have to be that person. They can maybe direct you in the right place, but we don't have to be that space. And I think once we all realize that, then it would, I think it'll be a lot easier space to navigate.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I feel like I'm talking absolute gibberish.
No, you're not. Like with this show, we always try and tell everyone, it's on the webpage, I'm not a mental health expert. I've had life experience.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I can like talk to someone like you and we can go, oh, it's like that and like that. And that's, and this show hopefully facilitates people who maybe are having issues, or like maybe you're listening to this and you're going, man, I've had that thing too, and that's awesome. Or maybe you're listening to this and you're going, oh man, that actually sounds like me. Maybe I'm having this thing. And we direct you to get like a help or find help or investigate further.
Yeah.
The show is not the cure.
No, exactly. Yeah.
If listeners, I'm so sorry, but if you are listening to this and going, oh, I can't watch, maybe I'll fast forward to the end of the episode where they give us the solution. We don't know.
I don't actually have one because, you know, still struggling out here.
Yeah. You're but, out here just having anxiety thoughts.
Yeah, exactly.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Not the voice of mental health, but possibly the voice of fried chicken in showers.
What do you do with depression? Like, how are you, and working on radio, how are you with silence? Like,
what do you mean?
Like, when you got like a job where there's noise and interaction, even though like I'm asking you, oh, how do you sleep? You're like, oh, TikTok. How are you with like just with your thoughts, just lying there?
To be fair, I don't really like to be in them that much. Yeah, and not, and that's cool. not me saying that they're dark all the time. Mm. It's just I think I thrive off being busy, and I only like being not busy if I feel like I've earned it.
Right.
And so I have to have like the most full-on week ever to have a Friday night where I do absolutely fuck all.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way my brain seems to work, and I'm not saying that's how everyone should be. That's just how I work. But I, sometimes when I'm in my thoughts, I can get really in my head about things, and so I just try to avoid that space completely. And I don't think that's me just brushing things under the rug and not acknowledging them. It's just me being very aware that that's not a space I'm comfortable in, and not a space I feel safe in. So I just have to do other things so that I'm not in that space.
Do you have any tricks for when you do find yourself like going in there, or you kind of suddenly realize, oh wait, I've accidentally popped in here?
If you, I find social media is a big trigger for me. So I've, for the last maybe year as well, I've had all my notifications off. I don't get a ding when I have an Instagram notification, Messenger notification, Facebook, Snapchat, nothing. None of it pops up on my phone. The only notifications I have pop up are a text, a call, obviously, but I'm always on Do Not Disturb, so you have to call me twice. Or I think I have, WhatsApp, because that's how I communicate with my work crew. And I think I have CoStar, which is like, if you love star signs, you'll know that app. It's like an astrology app, and it gives you a little affirmation every day. It's like, ooh, it's like, given to what you're feeling today. And I'm like, oh, okay, okay. And you can click on the app and go in deep into like what you're reading and astrology is for the day. But
yeah.
I get, all I get is a text, an affirmation from CoStar, and maybe a call, But yeah, that, I think that's how I get out of it. Because sometimes I have moments where I'll go, oh, I'm going to turn my Instagram notifications back on.
Yeah.
And it literally will last not even a day. It maybe lasts a couple of hours, and I can't do it, and I have to turn them off again.
So you get messages from people who are like, hey, thanks for talking about mental health. This is my own situation. And then they get, they just offload on you.
I did get that when I first spoke. Not heaps, but enough for me to be like, whew, this is a lot and quite
Well, trauma
taxing.
Has weight.
Yeah.
Trauma has weight.
It's quite taxing. Yeah. And I think I'm an empath as well. So I feel like I take on the emotions of others around me and the interactions I have. So like if my flatmate is having a shocker of a time and really going through it, I think I really feed off her energy and I can start to feel shit if she's feeling shit. And that's just the way my sort of, I don't know, oh God, it's a bit holistic, but that's how I seem to work. But even in the form of messages, if someone does reach out to me like that and is seeking that from me, I'm like, wow, this is a lot. And it takes a lot for me to go, okay, I need to be in a safe space before I can reply to that, because I don't want to take on any of their emotional weight.
Yeah,
because it's a lot. It's a lot. So it's, I think it's knowing what you can and can't take, know your limitations as well.
No, I'm the same. I'll get people and I usually just, I thank them, say thank you. And
give them some resource.
Say, hey, this, you can go to this. But some people want to like make you their therapist. And I think that's like,
no. I need a therapist myself.
Yeah, like. And I can't take your stuff to the therapist. Because it costs a lot.
It costs a lot of money. And yeah, I need to save my copies, so no thank you. I feel that.
And do you get some of the nasty stuff, can I ask as well?
Yeah, it's not actually that often.
Yeah.
But it happens, and I quite often, I think you get used to it in this sort of broadcasting space where when you initially fall into it or go into it, you can have 100 nice comments, but you get one bad one and that'll ruin your whole day. Even though everyone else is gassing you up, it's one stink one can ruin your day. But as from advice from my co-host Nixon, he's always said, if you can't take the bad, don't take the good. So it's just easier to just not read any at all.
Yeah.
But when you do get bad feedback, it is challenging, but you kind of just need to remember that it's a loud minority. All the people that aren't messaging, so like in the morning, for instance, on the show, all the people that aren't texting in are the passive listeners that you haven't invoked anything out of them, which probably 99% of the time means that they're still a fan of you and they don't mind. It takes effort for someone to text in and say,
yeah,
you're a dumb bitch or whatever they might say. So I just have to remember, okay, all those people listening, those hundreds of thousands of people listening that haven't texted in, they don't care. So why do I need to care about this one person? So I think it used to get to me, but I don't, it doesn't really get to me at all now. Now I'm just like, whatever, cool bro, or you know, or I'll just say it on air and I'm like, oh, the person that texts us in, shush.
In terms of mental health and the workplace, like when you've got anxiety and depression and you're in the kind of workspace that you're in, like how do you navigate like situations in the workplace?
I think it's being really open about your mental health, your mental state, and like, I will literally just kind of go to the boys. I'm fortunate enough that I'm really close to the boys I work with.
Yeah.
I can just go, hey, haven't had enough, like, have had a bit of an off day. Just bear with me, but I'm here. And I've always had this rule that if I'm at work, I'm good. If I'm really, really bad, I will, you know, sack up and say, hey, I can't come to work.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of mental health days before, and that's totally fine, and they're totally cool with it. But I think just being open rather than coming to work in maybe a temperamental state and not making them aware of it just puts them on edge, and it just puts a strain in our relationship. And it, I do find comfort in this, although it's kind of sad, that actually a lot of the announcers at my work within our building, I'm pretty sure 9 out of 10 of us go to therapy. And, you know, we all have something we're dealing with. And whether we're not diagnosed with something necessarily, we all need someone to talk to, because it is, it's not that relatable what we do and, you know, with the space we're in. So I think I have a lot of, a lot of comfort in that, knowing that all of us are kind of dealing with something in one way or another. So once I realise that, or having that conversation with anybody, whether it's the boys in my circle, or whether it's one of the mates I have in the afternoon show, or whether it's someone from another station, like one of the other girls or guys, just saying, like, oh, I'm really struggling, or just messaging them straight away. We've all got this really good support network where we all have each other's back. So I think in our workspace, it's just being open. It's just saying, I'm off today. And people are like, okay, cool. Because everyone just seems to get it. It's nice.
What do you do to make yourself feel good? What's your treat? Because I always, anyone asks me any advice on anxiety and depression, I always say, hey, don't forget to reward yourself.
I found that online shopping is not the one.
Well, COVID kind of broke it.
Yesterday, me and a couple of my friends, we went to a bar and watched the UFC. Yeah. And I was not feeling like doing anything at all. But just doing that, getting out of the house and doing something, I think is a way I can reward myself. And going, fuck it, if I'm going to spend a whole bunch of money on food out, who cares? It's nice. Sometimes I'll go on just a walk. And I know people aren't into that and it sounds a bit airy-fairy, but just, if it's a nice day, go for a fucking walk. Like, we have so many, here in Tamaki Makaurau, we've got so many amazing places you can go walk. I love going out, like, Piha ways and just going for a little bush walk. Put my headphones on. That, because that's so not something I'd normally do. But it's, like, kind of a treat to myself to go do that.
Yeah.
Go to the beach, read a book. The other day, I went for an ocean swim.
Yeah, man.
It was World Ocean Day, and everyone was jumping in the ocean, so I thought, oh, fuck, I better. And, but I didn't, I wasn't thinking about it as like a reward for myself. I was just thinking about it like, oh, I, you know, public sort of person, better advocate for World Ocean Day. It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
I set up my phone. I chucked my phone away. I put my rashie on because it's cold. Jumped in the ocean. And it was the most, it was cold and windy and rough, but it was the most amazing feeling. And just hanging out with Tangaroa for a little bit, you know, having my time in the Moana. And then getting out, I was like, oh my God, I feel amazing. And I just, the rest of my day, I was having a shit day. The rest of my day was amazing. So maybe like just step out of your comfort zone a little bit. I feel like that's how I reward myself. Like just go do something fucking fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just go do something random. And you can do it on your own. You don't have to be with friends. Yeah. there's my little lesson for you.
Is there anything, we ask this of every guest in the shower. Is there anything... because you've come into my safe space. I'm very appreciative of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anything that you would like to share in the shower?
Oh, God, you put me on the spot.
And since you're a fellow anxiety thinker, there's no wrong answer.
There's no wrong answers. Oh, wow, okay. Even though I'll be going, don't say that, don't say that, don't say that. I don't know. I guess it would just be that just to know with whatever journey anyone listening is on, that it's, like I've said earlier, it's not... You don't just have one bout of depression or one bout of anxiety and then it just stops. It's constant. and you will always go through it, and you will always reference back to it. And I think you grow, and like in the last like 2 years, I've still got the same issues, but I'm so much more self-aware. I've got more tools to be able to deal with it. But I know there's going to be times where I'm going to face those challenges again. So I think it's just being very aware that like, it's normal. It's okay to talk about it. You shouldn't hold it in, and that it's just a roller coaster, and it will come in waves. I think acknowledging that will make you just be like, oh, you just got to come to an acceptance of it. You can't just get rid of depression and throw it in the bin. It doesn't work like that. Sorry, but it's like, yeah. I guess that's all I'd say. I don't know what else to say other than that. But yeah, it's a fucking battle, but it's okay. And it kind of makes you better, and like trauma makes you funnier as well. So I feel like the funniest people that have been through some shit. So, yeah.
I've won awards.
Exactly. See, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower is produced for RNZ by Charlie Bleakley of Fruit and Nut Productions. The engineer is Ronnie Powick. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. You can find this podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for The Chicken. If you're rating podcasts and you want to rate ours, give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your comfort food and your mental health safe space with me, then you can tweet me on @JamesNorkise. If you're experiencing mental health issues and you're in New Zealand, you can text 1737. Or go to the RNZ Fried Chicken page, and we'll have a list of different mental health practitioners that might be able to assist you. If because of the pandemic you're experiencing COVID-related mental health issues, you can go to www.health.govt.nz. Look for the COVID page, and you'll be able to find mental health resources there. Stay safe. Whakatau lava. Matua.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.